there, and welcome to Gems of Wisdom with myself, Teresa Marone, and my co-host, Lauren Santerre. Today, we are going to be taking you to a soul sanctuary for women because the stories of Bridget's Place will inspire the hearts, minds, and lives of women through art, charity, and community. We feature women in the arts who nurture creative and abundant living for all religions, communities, and forms of spirituality. Today, our show is called Myth, Magic, and Kayleen Asbo because she is our special guest. She's a passionate scholar, a cultural historian, a musician, writer, and teacher who weaves myth and music and psychology with history, art, and experiential learning. So we are in for a true treat with Kayleen today. But first, let me introduce my co-host, Lauren Santerre. Wonderful. I do believe that Lauren might just be having a bit of a moment, possibly getting stuck in traffic or needing to take care of one of the many emergencies that we have at the Spiritual Center for Bridget's Place. So we are just going to move into our interview today. Lauren generally does the Gem of the Day. And we'll just have to pick that up a little bit later in the show or possibly next week. So let me go ahead and introduce our guest today, Kayleen Asbo. How are you today?
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Good, good. And how is it in California? Is that where you're calling from?
I'm calling from Mill Valley, which is just north of the San Francisco Bridge. And as we speak, I'm looking out my window to Mount Tamalpais. And unusually, it is blanketed with fog right now. So it's one of these misty days that is perfect for curling up with a cup of tea and to reflect on myths and stories throughout history.
Ooh, nice, nice verbalizing there. Is that part of your writer skill set that you're able to just bust that kind of visuals out?
Well, I do like to try to convey vivid scenes to people who are listening, and since this is only on audio, I'll try to give you a few juicy words to describe things, to imagine pictures in your own mind.
I love that. I really do. So you have so many tools in your toolbox. We had discussed before the show that we were going to stick to three main ones, and these are also things that you're going to be bringing to Houston at the Many Faces of Mary Magdalene, July 23rd through 26th. So let's get started with your fascination with labyrinths. Give us a little history. And also give us, just a little bit of the things that we feel about labyrinths that are based on a real deep connection.
Mm-hmm. Labyrinths are a wonderful tool of discovery. They've been used as a pathway of prayer by Christians for centuries upon centuries. They are pre-Christian in origin. In fact, one finds that there are labyrinths in virtually every culture and very different forms throughout the world. The earliest myths of the labyrinth actually come from the island of Gnosis, and we have the Greek story of Ariadne and the labyrinth as well. And so there's a profound connection. And if you look from an archetypal perspective for what is the universal element of stories about labyrinths across the ages, they're tools of revelation. They are ways in which we find our way. And in particular, in the Christian tradition, this became a very popular tool in the Middle Ages. And in the dawn of the 13th century, during a time of enormous chaos and social disintegration, with these very violent conflicts with wars between Christians and Muslims, a time rife with violence, not dissimilar to our own, the builders of Chartres Cathedral in France decided to put a very particular and special kind of labyrinth pattern into the structure, into the floor of the cathedral. And for those of you who are listening on home and have access to a computer, I just invite you to Google and put up Chartres Labyrinth. It's spelled Chartres. This particular pattern, we could easily do a whole day workshop talking about the deep symbology behind every aspect of it, its history, and also what the geometric design itself symbolizes. One of the most important things to know about labyrinths is that they're different than a maze. A maze is something that you get lost inside of. And a labyrinth, there really is only one path. And if you follow that path, no matter how many twists and turns they might be, it eventually leads you to the center. And I think that that's a profound metaphor for our spiritual journeys. As I think about myself and virtually everybody I know, the path is not a straight path. There are times where we twist and turn and we feel like we know where we're going and we can see the goal in sight. And then there are other times where we feel like we are completely at a loss. But what I love about the pathways of the labyrinth is that it is one path, and that if you just keep walking, you will in fact discover that all those twists and turns of your life are leading to one place. And I think that that's a profound mirror for my own journey in life, that I've gone down so many things that seemed like they were different paths, but in truth, it's all led to one place of integration. I've used the labyrinth in a number of different ways, everything from using it in an art therapy class that I taught at Sonoma State University, to using it within the context of church rituals within the Episcopalian Church in particular, offering labyrinth walks for All Souls Days and for Lent. It can be used as a way of reflecting on your entire journey. One of the favorite labyrinth workshops that I facilitated for was a group of women who had gone to elementary school together, and they continued to have reunions every few years. And this was actually a reunion for their 50th reunion. And it was a marvelous way to have a visual and somatic sense of being able to see your whole life journey and to acknowledge what your path in life had been. It's a profound tool for letting go of things that, grief, for example, in the aftermath of someone dying, a grief ritual around a labyrinth can be a very potent tool for spiritual reflection. And many people report that it also helps them cope with anxiety, and also helps them if they're creative artists when they encounter a problem. A favorite way for some creative artists and writers to walk the labyrinth is to walk into the pathway holding a question in their mind, and then to stay inside the center once they arrive in that midpoint that looks like a flower, until they have the germ or the seed of inspiration, and then to take that back out to begin their work again. And there's been some pretty profound stories that come from this, both of the stories of creation and the stories of healing and reconciliation. So a very, very useful and practical tool from a wide variety of perspectives. You don't need to have a spiritual orientation for a labyrinth walk to work at all. In fact, they're placing labyrinths in hospitals now across the country because they've discovered that it helps both with pre-op and post-op with alleviating both pain and anxiety through the procedures.
Well, that sounds wonderful, Kayleen. Thank you so much for that brilliant kind of walking us through, so to speak, of the beauty of a labyrinth. I have one follow-up question on that before we move into your studies in France. And that you mentioned that we could do a whole day's workshop based on the symbology of this one particular labyrinth at Chartres. And
yes.
Is there something or is there a grouping or a pattern that you find repeated over and over in labyrinths all over the world, or are they truly unique and individual?
There are several that are more common than others. There's one that some people like to refer to as the classical or Cretan labyrinth that looks very much like a human brain, and we find that pattern replicated in sites as far away as Iceland and Cornwall and Crete itself. And then there are other variants, for instance, the man in the maze that is woven into baskets and pottery in the southwest of America is another variation on a labyrinth pattern. But my most favorite pattern is absolutely the shark pattern. I find that its history and its profound symbology just is the most exquisite and, for me, the most powerful to work with. And that actually does lead exactly to your next question, because much of my work in France actually came as a result of being drawn to learn about the labyrinth at Chartres Cathedral. I was an apprentice of Lauren Artress, who has written a book called Walking a Sacred Path, and she is credited with sort of single-handedly beginning the modern labyrinth movement through her organization, Veritas, which began at Grace Cathedral. And she conducts yearly workshop pilgrimages to Chartres, in which there's always a different theme for the keynote, for the theme for the week. But the highlight is, without a doubt, the ceremony of the private labyrinth walk in the cathedral. And if you can just all close your eyes for a moment and imagine that you are in an ancient medieval cathedral in France. And you begin actually down below in the ancient crypt that was established in the 9th century but has been built on remains that go back far, far beyond. In fact, there's a well that was said to have been used by the Druids there, the sacred spring. And so you're down below, and it's very dark, and there's candles flickering, and then you hear the sound of bells tolling in the vast cathedral. And then suddenly a single voice begins to sing and to call to you, singing in Gregorian chant. And like centuries of pilgrims before you, then you traverse this pathway that goes along thousands of candles that have been lit up into the nave of the church. And the labyrinth walk occurs usually during the sunset hours, so that the shimmering lights that are this magnificent cobalt blue and greens and reds are all like a kaleidoscope on the stone towers. And then there's the sound of medieval music playing, a choir, and these instruments that you've never even seen, let alone heard. And you're invited in to this ritual of connecting with your soul. And I like to say about this private labyrinth walk at Grace Cathedral is that it's the experience of a lifetime that I have been compelled to do almost every year since I discovered it. And that is really what set me on my course for much of the study that I've been drawn to, particularly about medieval Europe and medieval France. Because I think that in the music, the art, and the ritual from those times, there is a kind of lost beauty that we are hungry for in our modern age. And there's something that is so profound about placing your bare foot on the same steps that have been walked by countless pilgrims for 800 years as a method of prayer and of reaching out and offering yourself to a sense of union and connection with God. And it really has been an extraordinary, extraordinary experience that Lauren created at Chartres Cathedral. And then the labyrinths replicated on that pattern
extraordinary.
Are all over the world now. It to be such a powerful tool that a whole industries have sprung up to take that same pattern and to replicate it. And I don't know how many thousands of sharp pattern labyrinths there are in the world, but there are some very significant places, such as Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, that has done the best they could to do an exact replica of this. And you can
I have a question here. Is this replication, well, let's talk about the original one. Is it a pattern of stone? Is it a pattern of paint? Or
yes.
is it a pattern of
no,
is
the original
stone?
The original was made out of stone, and it was actually quarried from a nearby quarry and hauled to the top of the hill by the pilgrims of the town while they sang. And so it was set in inlay in stone into this. And so there's some stones that are dark and some that are light. And again, those of you who are listening, if you Google Chart Labyrinth, Chartres Labyrinth, you'll be able to see an image of it. And it really is a very hypnotic pattern. And it's become one that's so popular that, as I say, I think that it is the most popular pattern now for doing permanent installations in cathedrals and hospitals and retreat centers. There's also, you know, you can also build them with simple stones outside. And at the Institute of Noetic Science, for example, in Petaluma, Northern California, they have a gorgeous pattern that's been inspired by Chart, but it's built a little bit more simply, just simply out of dirt and rocks and stone outside.
Wow. Yes, I'm looking at that. You know what? I've seen this before. Now that you said to Google it and I'm looking at it, I've seen this in certain, I've seen the pattern.
Yes, the pattern is one that has spoken to so many people that that not only are they in permanent installations or land installations, but there's whole industries now that are dedicated to painting them on canvas. And I think that that's what we're going to have at the Houston Cathedral is a canvas replica of the Chart Labyrinth pattern that's portable that you can bring in and offer, again, as a tool for reflection and contemplation in any setting. I have a little 24-foot, the actual labyrinth at Chart is 42 feet, so enormous. I know someone who built one on their retreat center that's almost a mile to walk inside to follow the pathway. It's absolutely enormous.
Wow.
You can actually Google it from outer space and see it on the land. And then there are these little mini Chart labyrinths, smaller versions painted on canvas that I often take into schools and churches to offer labyrinth workshops where we would, in fact, talk for many hours about the whole history and symbology behind it as well as having a ritual ourselves.
Wonderful. Well, my co-host, Lauren Santerre, would want me at this point to tell everyone that this is Gems of Wisdom and I'm speaking with Kayleen Aspo and she will be joining us at the Many Faces of Mary Magdalene here in Houston, Texas for a lecture, a labyrinth walk, and a workshop. And this is a joint venture of Christ Church Cathedral, Bridget's Place, and the Houston Jung Center. So Kayleen, are you about ready to switch gears and start talking about the fabulous events and your passion for Mary Magdalene?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm glad that they all go together, as you see, just like as I said about the labyrinth being one path. My first trip to go on pilgrimage to Chart was actually where I began to start to develop an interest in Mary Magdalene. And eventually I ended up having, well, actually even before I left, I had a very powerful dream about Mary Magdalene. And this set me on a quest. And so I've returned every year as I have followed her story. Now, many people now are aware because there's been so much research that's exploded in the past 10 years that if you read the Bible, Mary Magdalene of the biblical text, the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is depicted as the most faithful of all of Jesus' disciples. She's the only one that all of the accounts agree was present for the crucifixion, and she is the figure that that they concur was the first person to see the and receive the resurrection. And yet despite that, despite the fact that the Bible is very consistent and very clear that her role is one of being a faithful disciple and follower of Jesus that he entrusts with his most significant message, Later centuries confused her and conflated her with other women of the Bible and other women of different times, so that by the 6th century, there was the development of a misunderstanding that Mary Magdalene was a penitent sinner and a prostitute, the woman taken in adultery, or the woman who was weeping, and that was known as the unnamed sinner in Luke's gospel. So, like many people, my first experience of Mary Magdalene when I was growing up wasn't actually what I would call necessarily the biblical Mary Magdalene. It was more the popularized version of the penitent sinner, and my first memory is of Jesus Christ Superstar with, you know, the sultry actress singing, "I Don't Know How to Love Him." So it was fast, right? That's who I thought she was.
That's what I remember first, too.
Mm-hmm. And so I was very surprised once I began to do my research, which was pre-Da Vinci Code research. I was very surprised that by actually going back to the biblical text to start with, a very different portrait emerged and crystallized. And once you know that, once you actually go to the text itself, there's a wonderful tool called Blue Letter Bible, and you can put in Mary Magdalene and search. And what you will find is very surprising for what it is not. And the stories of the penitent sinner, the adulteress, that has nothing to do with Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene is really quite simply the woman who is there to witness both the death and the resurrection. And as I like to say, what that means at an archetypal level is that she holds a very rare place of being able to hold grief and sorrow in one hand and yet joy in the other, that she is someone who's capable psychologically of standing at the foot of the cross and witnessing the enormous suffering that she saw, and to be faithful to that to the bitter, bitter end. And then also to have the capacity to open her heart to joy on Easter morning. And I think that's one of the reasons why she's such a powerful, powerful figure for our time, because this is what we all need to learn how to be able to do. And the tendency in our world is to go one way or the other, to either close our eyes and turn our face from the enormity of the suffering in the world, or to become so hard and so brokenhearted and so bitter about those tragedies that we're no longer able to experience new life and hope. And what I really love to emphasize in my teaching then is the sense that even in those four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, this is the image of the woman that we have, a woman who knew profound despair and profound joy. A woman of enormous courage, a woman who must have had a truly compassionate heart, and a woman who was profoundly trusted by Jesus himself. So that's the beginning point for my investigations. And then what I discovered as I spent more and more time in France, and I try to spend at least a month there every year with gathering new information, is I became fascinated by the myths and legends that France has held of Mary Magdalene. And in their story, Mary Magdalene is actually the founder of Christianity in France, just the way that Peter and Paul brought Christianity to Rome. In France, it is believed that Mary Magdalene arrived on the shores of Provence following the crucifixion, and that she preached and taught, and that she converted, in the words of the legend, she converted all of what was known as Gaul with the sweetness and melodiousness of her preaching and teaching. And so you will go through in southern France, church upon church upon church, ancient buildings, and you'll find stained glass windows of her actually in a pulpit preaching, or in the forest with words and music coming from her mouth. And they believe that when she arrived after a number of years of her evangelism, that she retired to a life of prayer and contemplation in a cave in Provence known as La Baume, L-A-B-A-U-M-E, which translates as to holy balm, and that she spent the last part of her years of her life, the last 30 years, in prayer and deep, profound meditation. Well, what completely knocked me over is that when I actually went to this site, I found a little plaque there that said that that it had been established as a monastery and a chapel in the year 415 to guard the relics of Mary Magdalene. And it had been established by a group of Cassianite monks, which probably doesn't mean much to most of the listeners out there. But for me, I had a deep connection to this because of my own practice of Benedictine spirituality. And John Cassian, who established this place, was actually the foundation for the rule for Saint Benedict. What that means is that early Christian contemplative practice and monasticism as it developed in Europe can actually trace its way back to this very site where they held it as the final resting place of Mary Magdalene. And that, to me, was one of the most extraordinary discoveries that I've ever been able to have in my life. And so it sent me scurrying to different abbeys and churches and museums and bookstores and libraries to find out more about this connection of the development between Mary Magdalene, who I had had this connection with on the one hand, and the other on Benedictine spirituality, which has been a cornerstone of my own spiritual practice for 20 years.
Wow. You know, people call you inspirational, fascinating, compelling, transformational, and truly life-changing. And I think that that might sell you short. You are a fascinating person, truly. I can see why people want to bring you to their space and into their hearts and their events all over the world. So we are really looking forward to hosting you in Houston, Texas. And I just want to give the listeners a little idea about what you'll be doing there. First of all, the executive director of Bridget's Place is Lauren Santerre. She's my co-host on Gems of Wisdom, and she regrettably is not with us today, at least in voice. She is with us in spirit, but we're having a bit of a technical difficulty, so I wanted to make sure that everyone knows that Lauren Santerre is the one that puts all this together. So we have an art show that's going to be going almost a month long, where we're reimagining the face of Mary Magdalene, and we are still taking art for that. You can still submit to that, and we're going to be doing lots of receptions and shows, and all you have to do is go to bridgetsplace.org, click on the events tab, and click on Mary Magdalene, and you'll get all the information. But our featured event is with Kayleen Aspo, and she's going to be doing a workshop. Dr. Kayleen Aspo, I should probably be calling you out of respect. And she'll be doing her pre-workshop the Friday night of July 24th, and then an all-day workshop the following day, Saturday the 25th. So once again, the place to get tickets on that is bridgetsplace.org. Now, Kayleen, do you have anything that you'd like to be have our listeners be thinking about in anticipation of attending your event?
Well, I'd like to send a special little message out there to artists, because I think that they have such an important role to play in bringing out actually the stories of Mary Magdalene, both that are more faithful to the who she is in the Bible. If we go back to those earliest sources of her being a figure, a fountain of courage and wisdom, and how important that is. But also, if we look at all of history, the symbols that have been collected around Mary Magdalene are also very, very profound. And I'd just like to mention to your listeners then that there's a whole hour of an introductory lecture on the symbols of Mary Magdalene. And if you're an artist out there, I really want to encourage you to watch and listen to this. It might give you some inspiration. And you can find that, this lecture that I gave, on a site called mythsofmarymagdalene.com. And on that first page, if you go down to the very bottom, there's an archived introductory lecture about symbols. So that's one thing. Another element that I want to bring about in my day-long workshop is that we're going to be talking both about Mary Magdalene as she appears in the Bible, but also Equally fascinating is Mary Magdalene of a recovered early Christian text that's named after her, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And while it is a very small document, only 7 pages, it has been called so earth-shattering that it has been considered one of the most important archaeological finds of our of the past 200 years. And so we'll be talking about this gospel, the one that didn't make it into the Bible, and how it complements the Gospel of John and also opens a window into early Christianity in a very profound way historically. But even more importantly than that, I found that when people read this text and encounter it and discuss it and share in it, some ancient monastic practices of the imagination, that they actually have life-changing encounters. And I'll be leading a weekend workshop this coming weekend that's sold out that is focused on this. And every time I've done this, it really has had, I can't express enough what a powerful impact this story and this text has had on people. So we'll be sharing with that too. And as in everything I do, I so believe in the power of art. So I've collected actually over 500 images of Mary Magdalene across the centuries, and I'll be showing probably about 330 of those, as well as weaving that together with music and poetry written for Mary Magdalene. So it really will be a feast for your senses. But I hope more importantly, it will be also something that helps you come to a deeper understanding of yourself. One of the lines in the Gospel of Mary is, "Beware of those who say, 'Lo, here it is,' or 'Lo, there it is,' for the kingdom of heaven is within you." And using some of these ancient monastic tools of spiritual practice, I really truly hope that everyone who comes will have that little moment of going deeply enough that they have their own encounter with what is sacred inside of them. And I've found that Mary Magdalene is this unifying figure who, no matter what your age, no matter what your religion, no matter what your race, she has wisdom that she offers. And people usually come away from a workshop with her profoundly inspired and empowered. And that's certainly what I hope to create with Bridget's Place and Betty Adam and the Jung Institute is a truly inspiring experience that will help you get closer to your own depths and that you will leave filled with inspiration and courage.
Thank you so much for being with us today on Gems of Wisdom.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yes, and we all can't wait to meet you in person. And I'll just leave you with a thought from Lauren. She wrote this as a, kind of a thought-provoking, let's just all get ourselves in the right space to receive all this beautiful instruction and art and music. And she says, "Mary Magdalene represents an archetypal figure who points the way to a deeply embodied spiritual pathway that affirms the power of creation and the wisdom that can be found within the depths of each human heart." And that's what we wish for you. This is Gems of Wisdom. I'm Teresa Marone. And you can find tickets to this great event at bridgetsplace.org. Thank you so much, and we'll be talking with you again next week.